available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the... Where do we work again? 24/7 Sports Network.
Yeah, and I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the aforementioned 24/7 Sports Network. Together, David and I, together, like, what are the twins from the... There was a superhero twins. They would like put a ring together. What were those called? You remember, like from the cartoons?
Power Rangers?
What are we talking about? There was like there was like Batman and like the DC. I think it was the DC ones, like Wonder Twin Powers. Wow, that was hard. That was what an introduction this is.
We're killing it. We're thriving.
Absolutely.
Sitting in here in your absolute sauna of an office right now.
I'm sorry. The AC is not working. I just talked to Gerard Martinez for about 90 minutes about USC and just rolled right into this one. Wonder Twin Powers activate. We are the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football. And we have to finish up our off-season report today. We did, you know, some of the other schools. We got to do California schools. That's what we cover. We're going to talk about California schools a little bit later. We got some questionable USC and UCLA experts on, and we have Jackson Moore is going to cover Cal and Stanford. But if you have any questions or comments for the show,
keep them to yourself.
Pac12podcast@gmail.com is the email address, or you could call or text us at 424-532-0678. We don't have any texts or voicemails. We had some voicemails last week, but we were like in a rush. And we're not going to bother to go back and look at them. So you can if you want. But you can also tweet us at Pac-12 Podcast on the Twitters, the website, where we put up all the shows each week and put a little tidbits about what's going on, pac12podcast.com. That you can put that in your little Chrome browser or Safari, whatever, and our little website comes up, and you can check it out. If you're over on Reddit, you can just do a search for Podcast of Champions, but Reddit.com/r/Podcast of Champions. Discuss the podcast, the Pac-12, all the football stuff, George Kliavkov with other POC listeners. And then if you have the Apple Podcasting app, follow and rate us with 5 stars. You can rate us on Spotify and stuff too, but we're going to kind of push the Apple stuff. Have we got any new reviews or anything? Have you looked?
That's a great question, Ryan. I'm going to look right now.
You could look. But I do appreciate you interacting with the show. We don't have a ton of questions.
We don't. We have no new reviews.
So we need to get some
people
new
have
reviews.
Been slacking.
So I get on there, review the show. This will be a tighter show this week. Not a ton of newsy stuff going on, but I think, you know, two programs that they're, you know, we're going to discuss, USC and UCLA, some weird stuff going on there we want to talk about. Of course, Cal and Stanford, we're going to get into that with Jackson Moore. But there's it's just kind of a slow time right now. We had National Signing Day, and now it's sort of like some stability. We got to figure out what we're going to do with shows going forward. But I thought this was good to do some little off-season reports to get people up to date on what's going on with their favorite program.
The problem is we've shot our wad. And now are we really going to interview people again before spring ball or after spring ball? Probably not, because we don't like having experts on the show. We like to pontificate stupidly.
True.
So this is the
people
one
people did like it. They liked listening.
Yeah, they do.
Learning stuff.
And we don't want to give them what they want. We want to give them what we want to do, which is low effort, low quality.
We got to talk some Mandalorian, you know, or like Boba Fett. We'll talk. What's that? Encanto? Do I still have to
Encanto.
Watch that?
Encanto.
I have to watch that. I've been watching 1883, which is like the Oregon Trail video game I told David before the show. I did like Yellowstone. So this is like, you know, one of the, like the ancestors or whatever of the guy in Yellowstone is on the show. I think it's like a baby or whatever, or he's the main character too, but it's definitely like just people dying in all different ways, which is like, It's so weird. Like, people complain about, oh, I got a hangnail or whatever. And, like, people were just dying. Like, you could die of dysentery. You could die. There's so many ways you could just die out the prairie in the Old West.
Insights.
Is there a lot of insights? Like, just, it was way easier to die. Like, way easier.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, and when you, fundamentally, the dying when you're a baby is the real hardcore thing. Because, like, when people, so I'm going to take everyone behind the curtain of something else. People always talk about, like, life expectancy was shorter, right? Way back when, before modern medicine.
True, yeah.
And they don't really understand why. Because the thing is, like, when people say that, they don't really understand why. Because the thing is, a human being, they lived about as long then as they do now if they're left to their own devices. But really, what it fundamentally was, so many fucking babies dying. Like, just dying in childbirth all the time. And that's going to naturally reduce life expectancy. But if you made it past two, you had a pretty good chance of making it to 60. But it's just modern medicine. What it fixed? Childbirth.
Yeah, that definitely helped when you don't have the babies and stuff dying, and or the mothers dying from, you know, delivering a child. But this, you know, and if you were living in Boston or something, you're probably not, you know, you're probably not getting shot in 1883 that often.
I would argue, like, random person living in Boston has probably a better chance of living to a ripe old age, like if they make it to 15 or 20, than random person living in Boston right now.
You could probably argue,
because
that,
you know what's not zooming down the streets every day of your life with just random death mobiles every time you cross the street? Cars.
True.
And now they make them silent and accelerate faster.
It's crazy. And if you've ever driven to Boston, it's literally like those cow trails from they just paved them over, like they don't go anywhere. There's roads that don't go anywhere. It's pretty bad. But just watching that show and you're just like, oh, these guys are getting sick because they didn't boil their water. Like, just stuff that was just like, yeah, if you don't do everything right, like in a regular day, you could die, you know.
So, well, like it was the 1800s equivalent of like going to the moon. Like, you know, it's like, we're going out there and we're going to have to figure out our own food. We're going to have to figure out our own water. We're going to have to figure out our own shelter. We're going to have to figure all this stuff out on the fly. And we're, you know, we're dumb hicks in 1880. We're not, NASA scientists calculating all of this, and we don't really know what we're going into.
Yeah, we have a group of like 50 people. We have to cross the river. There'll be 45 by the time we're done. Like, literally, that's what happened. It was like, holy cow, like, this stuff is crazy. Well, we got since we don't have any Pac-12 news to talk about, we got to talk about nonsense, which we do so well. But we're going to start off with the Bay Area schools. So we have a very special guest for you. We'll bring on right now. All right, on the line, we have my buddy, my pal, Jackson Moore. Does a great job. I think he publishes about 20 sites on the 24/7 Sports Network now. But more importantly, he does the bootleg.com, which is covering Stanford, been doing that for quite a while, and bearterritory.net, handling both of those. Jackson Moore, we originally met covering he does the Barkboard, Fresno State site, which I used to run for a while, and Jackson took it over. But Jackson, welcome to the program. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing? Thanks for having me.
Can't complain. Excited to talk about Stanford in California.
For sure. This is our California day. We did the mountain and desert schools. We did the Pacific Northwest. Now we're doing the California schools. Which other site, real quick, Jackson, which other sites do you do? Fresno State, Cal, Stanford. What else do you got?
I've also got San Jose State, so I got all the Bay Area programs, and I've got Hawaii as well, which has been quite the interesting off season for them.
Oh my God, yes! Why, that was a crazy one. I was over there. I mean, literally, I was at the Polynesian Bowl, and like June Jones is just walking around talking to people about like, yeah, I'd take the Hawaii job, but and then the story comes out where like they said like, oh, you can have it, but you can only do it for like a year and a half, and here's who you have to hire. It's just like the weirdest stuff. And they don't have a stadium. It's so weird what was going on over there.
Yeah, it is bizarre and nothing like I've seen anywhere across the country. You had the state senate basically try to push Graham out the door and call for the heads of the athletic director and the school president. I mean, it's crazy. And yeah, the fact that they don't have a stadium on top of that. But head coach Timmy Chang, I mean, it might end up being a good ending to all that craziness they just had.
Yeah, the amount of caring about Hawaii is, it seems so insane given the lack of resources devoted to that program. Like, so many people really, really caring about that program and how it's run and everything, and then and nobody can even invest money at all to like build a stadium or do anything.
Yeah,
and I would add, there's a lot of passionate fans, but the crowds haven't been very big the past 2 years.
Yeah,
I
mean, nobody goes to the game.
Yeah, even when Nick Rolovich had things going pretty good, I went out there for the Hawaii Fresno State game. I was all excited to see a big atmosphere, and it was kind of empty. It was disappointing to see, but I think there is still a good portion of that fan base that's real passionate. And their stadium right now, the temporary one, only holds 9,000 seats for the moment. So if they can't fill that up, they got problems.
Wow. That, but I mean, to be fair, like the Aloha, like that bowl, that stadium was an absolute disaster. Like, it was such a dump. It just needed, it'd be awesome if they could build something cool, get the Pro Bowl and stuff over there again. Like, that would be awesome. But yeah, it needed to go. The fact that it was condemned, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, and they're working, the state's working on putting together a replacement there, something maybe about 35,000 seats and real nice, more modern and less about the capacity. But I mean, with the way things are going over there and all the chaos and the fighting, it seems like it's you never know what year that thing's actually going to get built. So they're focusing on that on-campus stadium, which is basically their practice field with stands. And hopefully in the near future, they get things going, because as we saw in the 2000s, they have the ability to produce success if the right pieces are in place and people are behind the team.
All right. Well, Jackson, thanks. That's all the time we have for today. So great insight on Cal and Stanford. No, I'm just kidding. So we're going to...
That's how you can tell how enthused we are to talk about Cal and Stanford. We just spent three questions on Hawaii.
Because I was just over there. It's just kind of interesting. It is interesting, and they'll play some Pac-12 teams. But let's start off with a team didn't do so well last year.
Stanford Cardinal.
I'm going to ask the question for Ryan. Where do you stand on Stanford having been butt this past year?
Man, I'll tell you, I got, well, first, before I get any farther, I want to make sure I clarify the site on 24/7 is now called Cardinal 24/7. I know it was the bootleg for quite some time.
But, oh, I'm sorry about that.
So if you want to search it up, you got to go cardinal247.com.
My bad.
No, no problem. And so I went out there. This was my first season covering Stanford. And, you know, I've covered Mountain West football for a long time, Cal for the past few seasons. And, you know, you just seen what Stanford has done over the last decade. I was excited to kind of get there and see some of that stuff in person, be a part of that coverage this year. And I got out there for fall camp, and I'm looking around, and the linemen are bigger. I mean, even with Cal, I don't want to down talk Cal at all, but the linemen are bigger than I've seen at any school I've covered. And, you know, the skills position players are as, you know, peak performance. I mean, they look, the team just looks like it belongs in the SEC, the way that the eye test goes in practice. And then they put the type of performance they put out there this season. And you just felt like they had, I mean, I felt like you saw what they did early in the year. They start out 3-2. They got the win at USC, which at the time felt like a big deal. And they just could not put it together from then on out. Of course, Tanner McKee going down was a big blow. And, you know, it just feels like they've recruited a big group of athletes that seemed like they should be able to play at a high level, but whether it was coaching or development, or it's hard to pinpoint one thing. Injuries were a big deal, but the team that played the last seven games was just not very competitive. And it was just sad to see, because you know, you've got coaches and a program that has much higher expectations. And that was about as bad as it's been since mid 2000s, before Harbaugh ever got there. That was a low point for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, 3-9 on the season, obviously not great. I got some flack early on. There were some big wins, you know, beat USC, beat Oregon, but a lot of losses, a lot of not great losses there. And it's the coaching stability is unlike any other program. And if I just have my little notes here, if I'm not mistaken, this is 11th season for David Shaw. Jovita Pritchard's been on staff for 12 years. This is fifth as the offensive coordinator. Lance Anderson been the defensive coordinator for 9 years. This will be his 16th season on the staff. I send out little notes and I'm like, coaching changes. And usually everyone has at least a few. And you sent a little simple note, coaching changes, none.
When things are going so well, why would you change anything?
But that, like, there really hasn't been, right? Like, so Pritchard's still the OC, Anderson's still the DC. I mean, really no changes after a 3-9 season?
Yeah, I mean, as far as we know, the talks from Coach Shaw the last couple of weeks and after the season finale was that said they were going to have some difficult conversations kind of behind the scenes, maybe reassess what they've been doing. But as far as any actual changes, there hasn't been any personnel changes that I'm aware of. No coaches have left and none have come in. And he hasn't revealed any internal changes, whether coaches were going to have more or less responsibility. At least none of that has been revealed, at least to the media or the public so far. So, I mean, especially, yeah, you would think after last season, and it's not just last season. I mean, the last couple of years haven't been great. The COVID year was their best run out of the last three seasons. And I mean, that was only half a season, but yeah, there's just no notable changes that we're aware of yet. Maybe in the spring they'll reveal some things, but should be the same 10 guys behind Coach Shaw.
The kind of nutty thing is, even with all the wherever you stand on it, whether it was full butt, whether it was a half moon, whether it was just a little peek of the ass crack, however you want to describe Stanford's season in terms of butt metaphors, it wasn't good. And yet they finished with the 17th best recruiting class, at least in the recruiting rankings. And even if you count transfers, which, you know, for Stanford, they're not as huge in the transfer market, still 27th nationally. How do you explain that? Like, how's anybody signing on for this right now?
Yeah, they did have one thing going for them, was that, as mentioned, the COVID season, it felt like they bounced back. Now when you put it in perspective of one okay season out of 3 years, it doesn't look great, but it looked like kind of 2019 was an anomaly. They were getting back on track. And the big thing they did was readjust some of their recruiting strategies. They're a program that typically would only just host one big official visit weekend in January. You had to be something special to get in on an official visit before then. This year they broke the mold. They had their official visits like everyone else in June, tried to keep up with everyone else. And, you know, really, they just hit a very high volume of those top prospects. I mean, if we're talking back in May or June, if I'm doing like the class calculator or like a mock class, best case scenario, just about every one of those four-star guys, you felt like they had a chance, they ended up getting. Really, the only one they lost was Kamari Ramsey, who was committed for a while, ended up flipping to UCLA. They were, you know, in the top three or five for a couple of guys, but ended up going to schools you kind of assumed they would end up at. But the guys that they had a realistic chance, those four-star recruits, and, I mean, they hit on just about all of them, and then they made a few surprises as well. Getting David Bailey was a big one, and it just goes to show that the Stanford opportunity, the academic opportunity, and what they're selling the program on, and with its recent history, is still resonating with recruits. And, you know, I think also just the fact that they're not involved with transfers, the fact that they're not involved with extra eligibility players. I mean, it's really, really hard to get into grad school, even if you're on the team. So Stanford was about the only school in the nation that went into this process knowing this is the amount of scholarships we have. We can fill these up. It's not going to be chaos numbers wise once the season ends with the portal. So they were able to guarantee kind of the back end of the class in a way that a lot of schools had to stay in flux too. So that, I think, accounted for the volume of the class. But you give credit to the assistants and the primary recruiters for landing the top guys.
Yeah, and I think recruiting's actually been pretty good overall, even the last few years for Stanford. Having a 17th national class, first in the Pac-12, is great. And when you consider the transfers, it doesn't get helped by the drop down to number four. But that doesn't take into consideration players that have left the program. And that's also been a common theme, where it seems like recruiting, compared to where the team is, has done better. But for the stability in the coaching staff, and for a guy like, you know, like David Shaw, that's just, you know, well respected, a lot of players seem to be leaving the program through the transfer portal. I mean, have you seen that? And what do you think the cause of that is?
Well, I think the biggest area you see it is in the graduate students, where they, from my understanding, it's very tough to get into Stanford grad school. And so if you're a fifth year senior, I mean, it's tough to stay on under normal circumstances. Now you've got, with the COVID year, a lot of guys that have a sixth year of eligibility. I mean, Stanford kind of went into it just expecting these guys not to be back, I think. And they had like 29 players that were varying levels of seniors, and only a couple that didn't have any years of eligibility back. And out of that whole group, I think only four or five are going to be returning to the roster with extra eligibility. So you have a lot of guys that kind of had no choice other than to hit the portal as grad transfers. As far as kind of the players you expected to come back, really Austin Jones and Nate Pete, both concerningly out of the running backs room. That was probably their biggest loss, whereas all the other departures, while it's very unusual for most schools, was kind of expected numbers-wise for Stanford. And that's going to be, I mean, I think that plays into some of the struggles as well. I mean, every other school in the country, you're looking at fifth and sixth year guys, older players, all that extra development. And basically at Stanford, you don't really redshirt, you don't really stay on as a fifth year guy, unless it's a special circumstance. And when you're having more older players than ever on other schools and you're staying the same, it's going to be tough.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, it is pretty nuts. So looking at, you know, who's coming back. I mean, obviously, this is a Tanner McKee show, but just kind of who are your picks for guys who are going to make an impact this year?
Yeah, the one good thing is that I think we've, I mean, everyone that was a key player at the skills positions outside of the running back room is going to be back. And this was basically a team that didn't run the ball very well. It was basically McKee throwing to his tall receivers. And the majority of those guys are going to be back. We saw Elijah Higgins, who was kind of a tight end hybrid coming in, has been more of a receiver as of late. And the true tight end, Ben Jurasek, who was just a sophomore last season. Those two guys really took over as the targets. I mean, it was real simple. It just kind of, you got the 6'5" quarterback throwing to 6'5" receivers on one-on-one coverages and throwing it up. I mean, end zone fades and jump balls and over the middle where you're catching over smaller DBs. That was just a lot of what they did, and they've got the pieces to keep doing that. So I look for those three guys to really be the faces, and you hope at the running back position they can find an answer and get that running game going and be more of the Stanford program they're used to being known as. And I would look for EJ Smith to be that guy. I think even if Austin Jones and Nate Pete were back, that Smith was going to have a larger role this season. He is the son of Emmett Smith. And he has kind of lived up to that when given the opportunity, just been injured quite a bit, especially last season. So looking for him to be probably the go-to running back. Casey Philkins is another back that you can put out in the slot and do a lot of interesting things with. So I think probably those two guys step up in the running back, and those should be the faces of your offense. They've got a lot of big, tall, long offensive linemen, but weren't too great in run blocking or pass protection really as a team. So we'll see if that unit can get going and if someone emerges as a pro prospect.
All right. That's the Stanford Cardinal offseason report. Got to do better than three wins, David. I mean, if David Shaw doesn't make a bowl game in the next 5-6 years, they might think about firing him, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Maybe in the next decade or so.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. See if Stanford's able to bounce back. Hopefully that number one recruiting class in the Pac-12 helps. Next, we got to talk about
California Golden Bears.
We're going to welcome in Jackson Moore, who covers the California Golden Bears. It is bearterritory.net still, right? Is that?
Yes.
Okay. Like, yeah, just want to make sure. Justin Wilcox in his sixth season at Cal. There was, you know, some off-season rumblings there. Maybe Oregon was coming calling.
Maybe he floated his name to like three different reporters to push him for like three different jobs. Maybe.
I don't know if he did, because he stayed. Like, I mean, it sounded like Oregon was really it. Like,
oh, sorry, Jackson. Congratulate Ryan's parents, as he was born yesterday.
Well, yeah. Any thoughts on the offseason with Wilcox? It looks like Musgrave and Peter Sermon are both back as coordinators. They're third seasons each. But thoughts on that offseason for Wilcox?
Yeah, this is a strange one because, I mean, some reports were saying maybe even declined or at least turned down some opportunities that may have come from Oregon or elsewhere. And they got assigned him to an extension. I mean, you've got a coach that's coming off of back-to-back losing season, signing an extension. And I mean, up until a couple of wins at the end of last year, it didn't sound like these were the talks that were going to happen with a really rough start. At the same time, now you're talking about a Cal coach that's going into his sixth year and an offseason that is not reflective of a team that should have that kind of stability. I mean, they lost, feels like everyone. I mean, you come off of a losing season and you have your starting quarterback, Chase Garbers, declines his extra year, goes to the draft. Kwani Dang, your star defensive player, a linebacker who missed most of last year, thought you might get him back for his extra season since he missed so much time. He opts to leave. Chris Brooks, your starting running back, hits the portal. Nico Remigio, a team captain, star receiver, leaves Cal for Fresno State. You've got an offensive lineman, McCade Mature, who's heading to Oklahoma. I mean, Cameron Good's been a playmaker, and Elijah Hicks on defense, both of those guys just out of eligibility. And I mean, this was a team in 2019, you felt like they were in a really good spot. They were building, they had a lot of legitimate talent, and they lost some of those guys to the draft and felt like they took a step back. And now you feel like you've lost pretty much everyone else that was a part of that core, and that didn't really go out in a very good fashion either. So this is a Cal team that is going over through a lot of turnover and is a very young team. They didn't recruit very well in 2022, but they did very well in 2020 and 2021. And that core is going to start coming together here. It's basically a young rebuild, I think, going into the season based off of what happened, which is just kind of an odd spot to be in when you've got a returning coach with an extension compared to a lot of the other turnover going around.
So when you were listing off those players who are leaving, I will put all cards on the table for all of our listeners out here. That was the entire list of the players on Cal's team that I know. So talk to us about, like, who are some guys that we should know heading into this year? Because you're talking about a young core that's going to develop a little bit, or including transfers. But who's going to step into these roles? Who's going to step in for Chase Garbers? Who's going to step in for Chris Brooks, Remigio? Kwani Dang, who's been there for a while now, Elijah Hicks, who are going to be the guys stepping in for these dudes?
Yeah, I think we started to see it on defense last year. I mean, especially at the beginning of the year, it wasn't the same Justin Wilcox defense we're used to seeing. They started to turn the corner a little bit in the back half of the season, and you started to see some names pop up. But, you know, the star power is just frankly not quite there yet. I think Mo Iosefa was an inside linebacker who was real young, really impressed right off the bat for Cal and looks very promising. Probably going to be one of your probably that next inside linebacker that's going to rack up the huge stats that someone inevitably gets from that defensive scheme. Daniel Scott at safety is a returning top tackler from last year's team as well. I mean, that's about as good as it gets as far as any recognizable names. You're just talking about a lot of young guys, a lot of defensive linemen that were kind of in and out of the rotation last year. If they can get Brett Johnson back, who unfortunately was involved in that car accident before the 2021 season, they're hopeful that he's going to be back. He's probably going to be the biggest name if he can both be healthy and be the same player he was before all that. But on offense, they did go out and get a transfer quarterback, Jack Plummer from Purdue. He started some games there. It's probably going to be their best option. They don't have much experience on the roster at quarterback. Ryan Glover was a grad transfer who went to Western Carolina and Penn, ended up at Cal, and he's got one more year. He only played in one game, and it was rough. Granted that most of the offense was out with COVID, so it wasn't just him, but would assume Plummer's going to be the guy. Other than that, they've got a lot of young quarterbacks. At running back, they've had Chris Brooks and Damian Moore and Chris Street. The two of them have been pretty promising backs and actually took a lot of the load from Brooks the last 2 years. I imagine those two guys, especially Damian Moore, are going to be, you know, they're not names that have emerged outside of Berkeley, but they're going to be more than ready to handle the running backs unit. And then at wide receiver is where they've really loaded up on recruits. They had a recent class that had like five guys, two of them being four stars, and they've really loaded up on young, talented receivers. I think that's really going to emerge this season where they've lost most of the guys that contributed last season. I named Jeremiah Hunter as probably the lead guy. He's been the one out of the many that has impressed the most so far and has established himself probably as the top guy. J. Michael Sturdivant was one of the big time recruits they got in the 2021 class that he should probably get a shot. And they've added a lot of tight end talent too, but they're just one of those teams that's going to have a lot of tight ends play and probably not one guy that puts up many stats.
The recruiting, as far as, you know, we talk about Stanford doing a really good job this cycle, pretty middle of the road for Cal, 60th nationally, 8th in the Pac-12. And if you include the transfers, that bumps up to 54th nationally and 7th in the Pac-12. What did you see on the recruiting trail? Was there things that could have got better? Is that what's your assessment of Cal's recruiting for 2022?
Yeah, you know, they had a lot of momentum with the 20 and the 21 classes. They picked up a lot more 4-stars than they had been getting the previous classes. And it seemed like they're on that route again. They had Justin Martin committed, of course, now headed to UCLA. Well, that was felt like a big deal. They had Jaden Ott, who committed, the running back, decommitted and then recommitted on signing day. So at least they were able to salvage one of their 4-star guys. But you know, they had some decommits throughout the cycle, especially as they got off to the rough start. And it just felt like it was a class that didn't quite reach its potential during the summer and it continued to sputter. They do have a lot of high-end 3-star guys that have some offers, a list of offers that would feel more of the 4-star variety. But ultimately, this is kind of a step back from where they were the past couple of years. And you know, again, I think that 2020 and 21 class, that's a core they can build on going forward. But this class is, they don't have the depth. They don't have the top end talent that those classes did. And we'll see if they can get enough from this group to keep that momentum going forward with the young guys.
What's your assessment of, like, I don't know, the mood and temperature of the fan base with Justin Wilcox, given, I mean, just kind of, it's not bad, but just given the, I don't know, pronounced mediocrity of Cal of late. And then, you know, because I can remember back in the mid 2000s when Jeff Tedford had it really rolling, Cal had an actual fan base. Are those people still there? And are they, how are they feeling about this?
Yeah, you know, when the losses came early, some of those games were pretty empty after the rough start. And it just felt like there was a lot of disinterest, really. And then they started to get some wins late in the back half of the year, and people got a little more interested and a little more optimistic again. And then all the stuff happened with the offseason. And you know, there was a point there, especially with the COVID issues, that that's been tougher at Berkeley than other schools. It felt like Wilcox and the administration, or at least the university, were really clashing. And it just felt like between that and the losing season, that it wasn't going to last much longer. And now all of a sudden, everyone seems to be committed for the long haul. You know, I think there's an understanding that Wilcox brings stability to the program and gives them a chance, but you're still kind of waiting to see that big season to come out of it. And the patience seem to be getting thin up until the off season. And I think it's going to be a bit of a disgruntlement as well in the next couple of seasons, I believe, just with a young roster. They're not quite built to win right now, I don't think, but by 2023, perhaps they might have a roster that can be a contender. And perhaps that'll be the thing that really rallies the fan base. But until then, I think it's still kind of wait and see.
One last thing for you, Jackson. Last year, I think a lot of people regarded Cal's schedule as the easiest. I think the beta rank people had it ranked the easiest. TCU, Sac State, and Nevada, but you know, end up losing to Nevada and TCU in that one. And also in the South, besides USC and UCLA, you got Arizona and Colorado. So that's usually an easier draw. This year, UC Davis and UNLV. I mean, two teams, certainly winnable games, but then a road game at Notre Dame. I mean, that'll be a little tougher, probably similar to the TCU game. But again, Arizona and Colorado on the schedule. Now Arizona's probably going to be a little bit better. It seems like the schedule's still fairly favorable. Really close to, I mean, that COVID game against Arizona, that doesn't happen. Cal's probably going to a bowl game. I know there's a lot of losses, but can this be a bowl team for Cal?
You know, it sure could be. I mean, you mentioned it. You look at the schedule, they open up with UC Davis and UNLV. I mean, they've got to be 2-0 after those. They're going to lose at Notre Dame, most likely. And then you get the Arizona game. Hopefully they'll have everything in order to get that win and get some revenge from that one. I mean, if you start 3-1, I mean, you're halfway there. And I think this is a team that should be a lot better, again, much like last season, in the back half than the first half, breaking in a new quarterback and a lot of other players across the board that are going to have to fill in, especially on offense. This should be a team that is much better at the end than the beginning. And so if they can get those wins early and then put enough of a fight together to get some wins late October and into November, I mean, the 6 wins is certainly attainable. They're just fortunate the schedule is the way that it is. And, you know, even last year, it's hard to compare it too much now with all the turnover in the roster, more so than anticipated. But that Nevada game, they had it. They let it go. The TCU game, they barely lost by 2. They go to Washington, they barely lose. I mean, they had a whole bunch of heartbreakers that they could have, if they could have gotten over the hump last year, would have been a much different story. But it didn't, and now they're younger and more inexperienced. It's going to make this season a challenging one for them.
All right. Well, Jackson, appreciate the time and insight there on all the Cal and Stanford stuff and a little Hawaii. But thanks again for coming on.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. Great stuff from our buddy Jackson Moore. We got to cover a couple of LA teams. And someone tweeted us. Did you see that? Like, I hope they get some good experts on the talk
about USC. Not those usual assholes.
Because I tweeted, we're going to be recording a new episode later this afternoon. Someone just responds, okay. Like, all right, thanks. Thanks. Appreciate that. yet another Duck fan says, is Stanford's offseason report just whoopee cushion noises for 6 minutes?
Sort of, yes.
And then Dustiny21 says, if Ryan brings a proctologist in to talk about Stanford, I will curse the USC training room for 3 generations. We did not. We didn't do that. And then Webfoot, who are the guys getting for the USC and UCLA experts? Someone good, I hope. sorry, Webfoot.
Great group of listeners.
That was good. Sorry, Webfoot. Do you want to start? You want me to start?
I mean, do I want to talk about UCLA football?
Okay, we'll save you for last. We'll start first with
USC Trojans.
So, Ryan.
I'm Ryan Abraham. I cover USC for USCfootball.com.
Yeah. So, Ryan, USC, not much happening this offseason.
Mm-mm.
Setting up for what is it now? The 9th year of Clay Helton, 8th year.
Clay's moved on. He took a job somewhere else.
Wait, what?
Georgia Southern. He's coaching down there.
Wow. So, he did that of his own accord.
Lateral move, I believe. Yeah.
Wow.
Those things.
Wow. Okay. All right. So did he get to name his successor?
He did not. It wasn't Neil Callaway or Clancy Pendergast. Or,
what about his brother? What about his stupid brother? Tyson? Tyson Helton?
To be fair, he's doing pretty good. He's head coach at, was it Western Kentucky?
Yeah.
He's actually doing all right.
Yeah, why isn't his stupid brother in charge? Shouldn't he have been named the successor?
I like his brother. I like Tyson. Yeah, no. This is Clay was fired after the Stanford
game. Wait, what?
Yes, after the Stanford game way back in September. So there's a coaching change for you.
Okay, all right. So
they went 3 months without anybody.
So USC, what'd they end up with? Jeff Fisher? Jack Del Rio. Yeah.
So Dante Williams was, takes over.
Okay, so he's the new guy? Head coach
Well,
now?
There was talk. He beat Washington State in his first game. So there was talk about him winning a national championship potentially.
Sure.
And being
did
the
he?
Permanent. No, he did not. USC ended up 4-8. So not.
But was it a good 4-8?
No, it was bad. They gave up like 60-something points to UCLA, which. We'll talk about them in a little bit. That certainly helped USC in the long term, but didn't in the short term did not help. Yeah, they were bad. They were poo. Like Cal, we just talked about a little bit. They lost to Arizona, who only beat one team and somehow beat USC pretty badly. Yeah, it was not a good season.
Okay. All right. So I'm thinking they went out and hired. What are we doing again? Are we doing Lane Kiffin again? What happened?
Yeah. So. They call him LFR, like Lincoln freaking Riley. He was running the Oklahoma program pretty much into the ground with like Heismans and playoff appearances and stuff. And
well, yeah, the weight of those expectations can drag a program down.
Right. And he's now the head coach at USC, which kind of crazy. They actually.
So he must be in his mid to late 60s retirement job. He wants to go to LA.
He's like 18. No, he's. What is he? Is he like 35?
He's like 37 or something. It's ridiculous. Yeah. This is how I cope, by just annoying the shit out of USC fans who want to hear all the great things. All right, so Lincoln Riley, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I was whelmed at that time,
right,
by the recruiting,
and called out by listeners.
I am now very much overwhelmed with now Caleb Williams on top of everyone else. I don't know what's your sense of the roster right now, given everything they've gotten in the transfer portal. What are the holes that still need to be filled for this to be, and are there holes that still need to be filled for this to be a legitimate Pac-12 contender in this coming year?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's turned around the roster faster than we thought possible. He pretty much got rid of anyone that was in the 2022 recruiting class. They kept a couple guys, and then they went out and signed, you know, they got Damani Jackson back, the five-star corner, like Raelique Brown, that, you know, guys that were committed to Oklahoma. He got a couple guys to flip, but only signed 8 high school players. But they brought in 13 guys for the transfer portal. They've lost 33 players off the roster from last year. So that's a chunk, you know, and there's probably still more to come. 18 players that went into the transfer portal, including some young stars like Jackson Dart and Michael Trigg going to Ole Miss. So and some players on defense that were good contributors last year, you know, like Drake Jackson, Drake London, guys like that going to the NFL draft. So there's definitely some guys that were lost. But the transfer portal has really made it. This is going to be a faster turnaround than I anticipated, at least the way they've started. There's still about 80 scholarship players right now. Lincoln Riley does want to bring in more. I mean, the highlight is, Caleb Williams coming in. And, you know, it was like a month-long saga. He announced right before signing day. We don't even remember if we mentioned it last week on the show. But, dude, you wake up this morning. We're recording this on Wednesday. USC's quarterback is on Good Morning America. Not like Good Morning Football on NFL Network. He's on Good Morning America.
This is so fucking obnoxious.
It's crazy.
Like, I'm just looking at his face talking about this, too, and it's so obnoxious.
It's insane. Beginning like Travis Dye. Out of Oregon.
Oh, you mean picking literally every Pac-12 transfer that they wanted from other teams? Like, even plucking them from good contenders like Oregon? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane. Yeah. It's stupid. It's not fair, and I don't like it.
So, I think...
Imagine, just take your mind back for a second, and imagine Pete Carroll with the fucking transfer portal.
Ooh, that could be, you know...
Imagine that 20 years ago.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean, to be fair, like, the Pac-12 was... I mean... Who was the best quarterback in the Pac-12 last year? Like, there's just not been. Oregon had that little run, and, you know, Utah was great at the end of the year, but there's not been. USC left a power vacuum, you know, and I don't know if anyone's. The void there, has anyone filled it thoroughly, you know? There should be multiple teams that were good. They're not. And that's the way he's built the roster right now, I think they could compete for the Pac-12 already, but they're going to do some more changes, I think, after spring football. The defense was really bad last year. I like what Alex Grinch has done at places like Washington State, Oregon, I mean, Ohio State and stuff. We'll see if he can kind of build it into, but they're going to score a bunch of points. Caleb Williams is, they're going to be fun to watch at least again. Utah's probably still going to be the class of the conference, but who knows? I mean, if they add more pieces than what they've added right now, I think they can certainly, even the way they're built right now, they can compete, but they got to play Utah next year, so I think that's going to be tough.
Look, being legitimate, the floor for USC is basically being, honest to God, I think the floor is being Oklahoma, which is like a kind of soft when they have to play an SEC team, but otherwise they're going to just dominate the conference probably regularly, and it feels like that. Like, it feels like that's probably what's coming, and the ceiling... If they can actually recruit some linemen with the national cachet that USC has, being, you know, Carroll years again, I think, you know, there's an effort to undersell it. I am leading that effort. I am pushing it very hard. But when you step back for just a second and just realize what they just did, what it portends for this coming year, because, yeah, there's some holes, sure. There's also no other team in the league that can... I think Oregon's the closest, and I think once you add Caleb Williams to the mix, it's quarterback should be counted for like 4 different guys. Like, it's the equivalent of getting like 4 cornerbacks. It's just, you know, it's they're the immediate favorite, I think.
if you look at the recruiting rankings with transfers, they're number one in the Pac-12 and ninth nationally. You know, they have the number one overall transfer class so far.
And I think that's partly the formula, because this is the first year of factoring in the transfers. I don't think the formula is counting transfers enough from that perspective, because USC's class is, I mean, it's 13 transfers to high school players. And a lot of those transfers are going to play immediately.
Yes. They're going to have a lot of guys. I would love to see something, and maybe 247 can do this. If you had like a whole bunch of guys transfer in, but who transferred out, like the losses, like does it offset like the guys that have transferred in too? I guess that's going to be the overall roster when you look at the composite, the talent composite. I guess that'll take all that into consideration when players leave.
Yeah, it absolutely should. But yeah, I mean, you look at this and they've taken some of the best pieces from a variety of Pac-12 teams, thrown them onto the roster, and then added two of Oklahoma's best offensive players, and Caleb Williams, Mario Williams. Like it's going to be stupid. Like it's not going to be enjoyable for 11 teams in the league. And the hope is that it takes Lincoln Riley, you know, better part of a couple of seasons to install everything and get it all humming the way it should. But the transfer portal tends to, I don't know, smooth that stuff out, because, well, instead of having to train up a quarterback on everything he wants, just bring in his quarterback who already knows everything he wants.
I think that does help, that he'll be there in spring football. They got to get better up in the middle of the defense. You know, they bring in like a Shane Lee from Alabama, who was a freshman All-American in 2019, but hasn't contributed as much since, been banged up a little bit. You know, they needed some. The inside linebacker play has been bad. I just, you know, their secondary was bad. They gave up a ton of big plays last year. Can Alex Grinch fix all that kind of stuff? I think that's going to take a little while for the defense to sort of gel, but they should score points. I mean, they really should. And Brendan Rice comes in, Terrell Bynum comes in, like two Pac-12 receiver transfers, and then Mario Williams from Oklahoma too. And, you know, they still got guys like Kyle Ford on the roster that was a five-star. So they were underperforming on offense for sure. I like their running back room a lot. You know, Austin Jones, you know, bringing in Stanford's probably best guy or second best guy or whatever. And
Stanford's best guy and Oregon's best guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That helps, right? You know? Uh-huh.
Yeah, it helps. It helps. It helps when you just construct an all-star team of the best players from a variety of teams. I mean, Brendan Rice was the most exciting player on Colorado last year.
You could argue, yeah.
No, he was. I'm telling you, this is a fact. And now he's at USC.
So, yeah, I mean, I think the roster looks a lot better. Well, they're going to, I think, evaluate what's going to go on in the spring and probably have to fill in some holes. I don't think this is going to be some ready-made Pac-12 winning team right now. But to go from 4-8 to 8-4 is, I think, really realistic.
Shut up.
Things go right.
Shut up.
Don't you think that's...
Shut up. No, this team is going to go 11-1.
No, they're not.
Yeah, they are. And if they don't, it's a disappointment.
Okay, well, there you go. I like that.
Yeah.
Nice.
They go 8-4. You didn't hire Lincoln Riley to go 8-4 in year one.
Well, from 4-8, that's a pretty big improvement.
It's well, a fart like, noise for you.
I mean, Chip Kelly had a big improvement this year and gets an extension.
I will leap across this table. Don't think I will.
We did get to meet all the assistant coaches.
How was that?
That was cool. Like, I mean, it's good to get some. So wait.
So you're telling me the head coach was hired 2 months ago?
Yeah.
And you already talked to all of the assistant coaches?
Yeah, one of them wasn't available. He was sick, I think, or something.
Interesting.
But, yeah.
Interesting.
But Chip Kelly,
do you know how long it took UCLA to make the assistant coaches available?
How long?
4 years.
That's great.
Do you know who was never available for a single availability?
Defensive coordinator?
Defensive coordinator Jerry Azzanero.
He retired without speaking to the media.
He resigned. It still hasn't been announced by UCLA because I think he's trying to cash in on that sickie pension. But, yeah.
Nice. But, yeah, overall, that was cool. Now, Lincoln Riley's not been very media friendly, but he's taken advantage of the Super Bowl stuff that's in L.A. right now. He's been on Cowherd and Jim Rome and all these places. Obviously, Caleb Williams going on, like, he's going on a bunch of national stuff, too. So they're trying to take advantage of the media blitz or whatever going on with the Super Bowl in town. It'll be interesting to see if Lincoln Riley does open things up to the media. Can we watch practice? Because he was Caleb Williams never talked to the media when he was at Oklahoma. Now he's on Good Morning America. Like, that's a pretty big difference. I think he kind of understands that just being in LA, if you want to be relevant, in a city that has, you know, LeBron James and Matthew Stafford and Jalen Ramsey and, you know, Kawhi Leonard and, you know, Clayton Kershaw. Like, there's just stars, pro stars all over the city. If you don't make, you don't let the media come in and talk to you, they're just going to talk about somebody else that's here. You know, there's a lot of stuff going on. So I think he's going to be a little bit more open to the media than he was at Oklahoma. But I mean, I'm hopeful just because it helps me, helps my job.
Well, let me tell you what has happened with UCLA being secretive. There is one newspaper that covers it, like one non-Daily Bruin newspaper that covers it. And then there are like two team sites and that's it.
Yeah. I mean,
that's the daily coverage.
That's not what you want, right?
No.
You want, especially when you're going to have, if you're in a college town, you're the only game in town, like you can do whatever you want. They're going to like figure out a way to cover you. If you're in LA, yeah, you're not going to get that kind of coverage. So,
correct.
I don't think it works that well, especially with NIL that players want. You know, Caleb Williams announced all these like NIL, you know, he's Beats headphones. He's like a spokesperson for that. A bunch of other deals he's announced on like social media and stuff. If your coach doesn't let you talk and you can't get out in front of the media and reach your fans and reach the public, that hurts your own personal brand. Like if we don't know enough about DTR, he could be on, you know, getting all these deals and stuff. And if you're not allowed to talk that often, I think a coach can really hurt with name, image, and likeness deals for your players.
Sure.
Do you agree with that or no?
Yeah, I think that's definitely true.
Right. Is there anything else you want to know?
No. I mean, I feel like I'm doing a disservice to USC, but I can't continue to talk about USC.
That's okay. That's fine. But yeah, it's
really good. Things are going very well. Everyone should be very excited who's a USC fan, and everyone who's not a USC fan should be feeling even more antipathy towards the program that they always do.
And I love, you know, I will still, you know, we'll talk trash about USC and stuff, but just like personally, like we do this for, you know, when we're doing it for a living or whatever, when fans don't care, it's not good for us. It's not good for our business. So, less people listen.
Here's the argument I make, which I think is totally valid, is that because your bottom line is so tied, and people don't understand this, I don't think fundamentally, but your bottom line is so tied to the success of the program.
Yeah.
Like, so tied. Like, I mean, the not even getting into the numbers, things are going very well for you because USC hired Lincoln Riley and he's made such a huge impact.
They haven't played a game yet.
You are at a greater level than I think the salaried employees who are in charge of USC football invested in the program doing well. Like, you need it to do well because it's tied to any growth in your money. A salaried guy is getting his money no matter what he does. He's got a buyout. He's got the whole thing. You need the programs to do well. So while you're not technically a fan, you as a professional interest are more interested in this program doing well than virtually anybody involved in the enterprise itself.
That's true.
And so and that's where I like kind of get into it with some of the fans on the UCLA board, because they're like, what's your agenda? What's your agenda? And it's like, my agenda is that the programs are really good. And the reason I want them to be really good, yeah, I am much more of a fan than you are, but also it's much better for the money.
Yes.
It's much better for the money. And so just, you know, just throwing that out there.
Yeah. I've been, as far as like professionally, happier than I've been in the last couple of months than probably 7 years.
Yeah.
Like literally, like I'm just like, oh, I mean, because you're doing the same, like we take pride in our work. We try to do a good job. We cover recruiting events.
Well, it's how you maintain when things are not, when you're in the Clay Helton eras. You got to continue to do the stuff because people will stick around, but getting new subscriptions requires excitement.
Yeah. And it doesn't happen that way. And you might fly somewhere and do a great story on some 5-star kid. And when you come home there and the fans are like, I don't care, Clay Helton's still the coach. Now, if you do the story, like it gets a lot of views and people are interested again. And that, you know, if you do that, we're recording the show the same way we did before. But more USC people are going to be listening because they care now. And if I do the Peristyle podcast, way more people are listening. We do our video shows, like more people are watching. You're doing the same work, but now there's more people invested in it and there's more people signing up for subscriptions. And like you said, it's just, you still have to do the work, but it's just nicer when it's received better by the fan base when the team is doing well. So,
And it's a testament to the quality of your stuff and the quality of Tracy's stuff that you've had one of the worst decades of USC football of all time, and UCLA is, well, It's doing what it does. And, like, the two sites still go strong because it's a good quality product. And so people who are there, who are the diehards, who are the hardcore, like the hardcore of the earth who have not been eroded away, they're still sticking around. And then you start getting new people when things get exciting, when they win games, when a new coach is hired, whatever it is. That's when you can start to, you know, indoctrinate new people. But they don't stick around if the quality isn't good. And that's what, you know, it goes both. But you don't want to be doing a great product and be doing a lot of good stuff and have nobody paying attention or giving a crap about it, because the entire program is so depressing.
Yeah, that's out of your control.
Like, right.
Fan apathy is not like USC would get mad at me when we write negative things about them going 5-7 and them flying a plane over to fire Clay Helton and stuff. It's like, it's not me. Like, the fans are going to say that, you know, I would rather you guys be good, but you stink. And I'm going to say you stink. And then I'm not making the fans say you stink. Like, they're saying it. Like, it would be much better for me, like you said, for the team to be good. So,
yeah,
I'm not trying to tank the program. I'm just like, if they're stinking, I'm going to tell you they stink.
Exactly.
And they stunk.
Yeah. Well, and that's for a long time. But that's our province is to be essentially the no BS vendors, you know? When it's good, say it's good. When it's bad, say it's bad. And that's how you maintain your integrity with that hardcore group who are not leaving no matter what. And then when things are good, people jump on who are fair weather, and then you suck them dry for a little while, and then things go bad again.
So definitely excitement around the USC program, but that's for off-the-field stuff. There's excitement around the UCLA program because of on-the-field stuff. Huge turnaround. First winning season, winning against out-of-conference teams. We got to talk about our last team in our offseason recaps. We're talking about
UCLA Bruins.
Signing that extension, that was that. I think Tracy was showing me the ticker. It was just going off the hook. I think we signed 3,000-4,000 new subscriptions just overnight.
I would think so.
It was nuts. It was absolutely crazy.
Imagine if they locked them up for longer.
Yeah, dude, we're going to take a cruise to the Mediterranean on a spaceship. UCLA extended Chip Kelly. I would say it was a understandable choice that I disagree with. I think they would have been better served firing him, and or letting him walk or any.
He went 8-4.
I will fight you.
He put 62 or 3 points up on USC.
Uh-huh.
I mean, that's huge.
Yeah.
It should have been 8-year extension.
I know, and that was the culmination team for Clay Helton, so you know it was pretty good too.
Yeah.
They extended Chip Kelly. I don't think we have
Dave's hand is over his eyes as he says that.
I don't think they've thrown out the full contract terms yet. But it was justifiable. And given UCLA's budget situation, maybe it was necessary. Given that they're running like a $62 billion deficit or something. I think I had the first letter wrong. I think it's million, but it feels like billions. Chip Kelly sticking around. A lot of staff changes this offseason. The defensive staff has gotten more or less completely overhauled. Arizona poached a couple of guys from UCLA's staff, Johnny Nansen and Jason Kafusi. And so UCLA went out and hired I'm going to try not to mess it up. Malloy. I'm just going to say Malloy from Washington as their outside linebackers coach, and Chad Kauha'aha'a.
Yeah, I was always struggled with that one.
Yeah.
Chad. Chad or something. Chad.
Chad. as the DL coach from, he was from UNLV. Old friend, Tim Drevno, line coach.
Another former USC.
Yeah, he's replacing Justin Fry, who's a big loss. Drevno at one time was a goodish offensive line coach. He, like many others, maybe infected by the disease of Clay Helton. So he's getting mentioned a lot by recruits already, which is probably a good sign, because I know one of the things that towards the end of his tenure at USC was that he really lost energy as a recruiter. So that's probably a good sign. And then the one thing that we're all waiting on is first an official announcement of Jerry Azzanero's resignation. It's a open secret at this point that he is resigning. But it hasn't been officially announced by UCLA yet. And then the defensive coordinator hire. The interesting part here.
No offensive coordinator either, right? Because Fry was.
But Chip Kelly, it was not nominal because Fry did some of the planning, but Chip Kelly's his own play caller.
Okay. But neither coordinator are like announced right now.
Yeah, and I don't know if he's going to hold on to offensive coordinator as a reward for somebody or how it'll work. But for now, the main one is defensive coordinator. The interesting part there is that they've hired defensive assistants without having a defensive coordinator in place.
That seems smart, right? Yeah. Well, you don't want to – I think what in college football, like I haven't covered it that long, but typically colleges – don't hire their coordinators till after the Super Bowl, right? Like, is that the way it goes? Is that how this usually works?
So it made a lot of people think that he was just going to promote another Clay Helton friend, Clancy Pendergast. It doesn't sound like that's going to happen, but it's hard.
He's an analyst. Like, there's an honest
he helped out in the bowl game as the defensive line coach.
Okay, okay.
And then I think he's just doing analyst work now. So basically just waiting on the defensive coordinator. It is interesting. I think that limits your pool when you're not going to allow them to make staff changes, essentially. So I'm interested to see what that'll look like. Because if you're going an NFL route, that might make sense. Because NFL guys are used to just kind of walking into a situation and just having to make it work. So maybe he's going to try to hire somebody who's an NFL assistant currently. And it'll be interesting to see what changes. I mean, they could always also promote internally, have Brian Norwood do it, who was the guy they hired from Navy a couple years back. It's just the defense hasn't been good. They need to upgrade significantly there from a schematic and play calling perspective. And so that's obviously the main thing to watch, because if you're making an argument about why Chip Kelly has failed thus far at UCLA, it does boil down largely to the defense.
Yeah. So we'll see with the coordinator stuff. It is kind of weird. Like, everyone was giving Mario Cristobal crap for taking a long time, but he ends up getting a couple of really good coordinators. I got Kevin Steele and who's the offensive coordinator, is the guy from Michigan, Gattis, like, who was a Broyles Award winner and stuff. So he's putting it together, staff and stuff down there. I mean, and honestly, though, like, do you feel like this is a thing where you could poach a good defensive coordinator from somewhere? Or what is the thought process of getting the new DC for UCLA?
I think the main thing is with the delay, there's no point in rushing at this point because you're not recruiting based off your defensive coordinator. And I think I don't know how much was structurally wrong with UCLA's defense as much as it was play calling. Cause I mean, they're running the same kind of 4-2-5 that basically everyone is running these days. So it could be just something as simple as Chip Kelly knows sort of what he wants. And he just wants to find a guy at some point who can run that thing. And it might be as simple as promoting internally, but he's not in any rush to do so. I really don't know. I mean, we're all trying to assign logic to this process that doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because why would you hire all these assistants? Because first, it's not as if UCLA is a recruiting powerhouse. It's not as if they needed to hire
top 60 class.
I will fight you again. I will jump across this table and I will fight you.
I mean, that's top half in FBS.
But like, it's not as if you needed to hire all these low level assistants this early. Like, you could have waited, had Clancy Pendergast get out there and recruit, and whoever your grad assistants are, get out there and recruit.
Clancy Pendergast doesn't recruit, by the way.
I know. I know. But you could have, like, UCLA's done this in the past where they'll just get like a random person, hire them as a coach, like some guy who's like a, you know, a youth football coach with one of these coaching changes.
Right, right.
And just take 2 months of their time to, like, hey, go get your kids and get them to come here or whatever. Like, that's happened in the past. So I don't know what the rush was. I think that is going to limit their options. And now I don't know, you know, this could wait until they've got to do it before spring ball. So I think we're probably looking pretty quickly here. Like, I think it's got to happen in the next couple of weeks because they have to get some stuff installed and figured out before they head into spring. And under Chip Kelly, spring ball's almost always started in the first week of March. So they don't have a lot of time.
Do you have to have a defensive coordinator for spring football? Like,
I will. I don't want to continue to threaten violence, but I will actually commit it. So not a great situation, but it is just continuing weirdness of the Chip Kelly era at UCLA.
Is there, so DTR coming back was big. Dylan you know, Dylan Gabriel coming in was going to be interesting, and then that sort of ended weird. You could put him on a top departure or two, like on the list. But DTR's back. Like, so he's, I mean, you could argue the best quarterback of the Pac-12 or potentially that, right? So, like,
yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting. I think Caleb Williams obviously had a great year at Oklahoma, but Dorian Thompson-Robinson, I mean, when you look at it, like, I think people bring a lot of baggage when they assess Dorian Thompson-Robinson based on, like, what he was doing his first and second and third years, where it was, you know, there were a lot of ups and downs. This past year, he was really good most of the year.
Yeah.
Like, I thought he, you know, was generally pretty sharp altogether. So getting him back for yet another year, he's going to set a whole bunch of UCLA records if he's healthy for the entire year. That's cool to see. I think he's going to be a more polished product because he has been every single year he's been at UCLA. So that's a huge addition. There's some key departures that, you know, I think getting Dorian Thompson-Robinson back, getting Zach Charbonnet back, obviously huge. But from a departure perspective, UCLA is losing its two starting offensive tackles, and tackle is not really a position where UCLA has any depth whatsoever. There's one guy who played last year in Garrett DeGiorgio. Otherwise, it's probably a guard like John Gaines flipping over to tackle, and he's not a tackle. So that's going to be the tricky part. They still need to acquire some stuff in the transfer portal to feel good about next year. And that's, you know, USC is talking about what do we need to get to contender status in the transfer portal, maybe heading into spring or out of spring ball. UCLA is like, what do we need to be basically as good as we were last year? And that at minimum, they probably need at least one tackle and maybe two in the transfer portal. And if you've been tracking the transfer portal, acquiring offensive tackles
that's a
is
tough
not
one.
Easy.
No, that's a tough one. But the if you combine the transfers, the 32nd class nationally, fifth in the Pac-12, so certainly moves up there. And if, you know, after spring ball, able to add some pieces, I think that's going to be helpful. I mean, Zach Charbonnet was a stud. I mean, I think the offense, the way it was looking late in the year, you know, with your power running, you know, DTR making plays, he wasn't screwing up. Like, he would just have these weird screw-ups a lot of times before.
Yeah,
I don't think he was doing much of that.
Yeah, it was none of the empty-hand fumbles. Like, it
right,
was,
yeah.
So much of that stuff had gotten, and he wasn't making just horrible mistakes. Like, so many plays have just, the simple stuff that you don't really notice, it shows up in the box score as a huge loss, but ball gets snapped over your head, and instead of trying to do something stupid with it, just fall on it. Or pick it up and throw it out of bounds. You know, it goes down as an incomplete pass rather than a 25-yard loss. He was doing stuff like that finally. Finally, like, kind of those heady plays were coming. And if you look at his, I think his rushing, not true rushing numbers, but the sack-adjusted rushing, or not sack-adjusted rushing numbers, the ones that include sacks, those tell a really good tale about his progress, because those continue to go up because he's not taking devastating sacks anymore. Like, he's not doing that with the frequency that he once was. And that's drastically improved his efficiency as an offensive player. He's not perfect. I mean, there's a lot of things in his game where you're still going to be like, not a whole lot of touch there, and a variety of different things with just his, you know, decision-making, various things. But he is far more of a positive than a negative now.
Is Brian Norwood still on the staff?
Yeah.
So he wasn't he kind of a co-defensive coordinator?
Sort of. Yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier.
Okay.
When you weren't paying attention to what I was saying.
Right, I was checking text.
Yeah,
or
you were doing something else. He could. That's another option.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to happen, but that's another option for Chip Kelly to promote from within. And then defensively, it was just really bad personnel-wise. They've gotten some guys in the portal. So they lost Otito Ogbonia and Daytona Jackson, the two starting defensive tackles. But they brought in Gary Smith from Duke and Jacob Sykes from Harvard, two pretty quality transfers, both of whom could slot in more or less immediately. I mean, they still have the USC guy. What's his name?
Jay Toya.
Man, brain dead. Jay Toya coming in, and he's going to more than likely start at one of those positions.
He was an absolute stud when he, like, that spring for USC.
Best commentary on USC football of last year, by the way. Jay Toya, everyone was saying, oh, he's going to come in and start at USC. Like, he's blowing things up. He spent most of the year on the bench at UCLA on a bad defense. If you want to know what was wrong with USC last year, that right there.
He was going to be a stud, yeah.
He was going to be a stud for USC, and he couldn't really see the field until the end of the year for UCLA.
Well, hopefully he can be a stud for UCLA this year.
Yeah, we'll see. And then the one that is kind of exciting is Darius Muasau, the linebacker from Hawaii. He's kind of a tackle machine for Hawaii. So if he can come in and provide a little bit of that, UCLA's kind of been without a true middle linebacker for a long time. So, you know, it's a Mountain West guy, but he played really, really well at that level. So maybe the step up, he's going to be able to translate.
Nice. Anything else on the Bruins going in? We don't know spring football yet. So yeah, we'll
they don't usually announce that schedule until about 3 days beforehand,
which is funny. So we'll but David said we sort of blew our wad by talking to all the experts early. But you know, we'll get some more storylines and stuff coming up from spring football. I might get fired up and watch all the spring games again if they show them on the Pac-12 network. David will not do that kind of stuff. But that's I think that was pretty successful. Like maybe the last two programs we talked about, the experts weren't very good, but we had all the experts on for the other 10 programs. I think they did an excellent job.
I agree.
Yeah, it was good stuff. Okay, why don't we take a quick break and we'll be back and answer a few questions. All right, we're back on the podcast of Champions. We've got a lot of questions this week. I keep forgetting to use this drop, but I always love this one.
Now for my favorite part of the show. What did I say? Talk to the audience. Oh, God, this is always death.
What's actually better than death for our listeners? Because we have some really great questions. Do you want to start off, David? I think we only have like three this week. Is it Casey?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Good idea or bad idea? David and Ryan, want to get your take on this. I'm starting to see recruits include pictures from the 80s and 90s in their offer announcement tweets. Seems like what's old is new again. To capitalize on this with recruits, how about one weekend this season, all Pac-12 schools suit up in throwback uniforms? Most schools have some kind of retro uniform on hand already. Relatively light lift with big buzz upside. If any AD could pull it off, seems like Klyavkov could. Weeks 5 or 10 look like prime opportunities. Appreciate your thoughts, and thanks for putting together the series of conference team reviews, Casey and Rancho Cucamonga.
Hey, Casey. Cal does it pretty regularly, right? I think when they play USC, they like the old Joe Cal.
Yeah, but coordinating to do it all on a single weekend would be very cool.
It'd be kind of fun. Like, I think it would get the Pac-12 talked about. And then, you know, schools can sell more jerseys. I like that one. I haven't heard of anyone doing something like this, but I think that would be he asked good idea or bad idea. I think it's a good idea.
Great idea.
Yeah.
Love it, Casey.
Thanks, Casey, for that one. Our buddy Peter in Vancouver wants to talk about playoffs. Gentlemen, since it is the offseason, it's a good time for speculation. Of course, we do a lot of that. I would like your thoughts on these questions. So he starts off with, which do you think will happen first? A Pac-12 team will make the four-team playoffs or the college football playoffs is expanded?
They'll make the 14 playoff.
I would agree, because the expansions thing could pop at some point, but it's not going to be in 2022. I don't think it can be in 2023. So like it might be 2024. And then I think it's over in like 2025 or 2026. So like, yeah. I think you got two more years of four at this point. I think from what I've read.
Minimum four.
Yeah. Pushed it out.
Minimum 2 years. Yeah.
And then closely related is whether a Pac-12 team wins in the national championship or the college football is expanded beyond four teams.
Expansion first.
I would agree. If Utah's elevated, you're within striking distance of the playoff.
Shut up. Just shut up. Shut up. No, shut up. Because it's USC, and it's USC in 2 years, and that's the question, whether USC in 2 years or 3 years can win a national championship.
You don't think Utah can elevate?
No, I mean, Utah can make a playoff, the same way Washington in 2016 can make a playoff. But to actually win the title, they don't have the collection of talent. And that's no knock on Utah. Utah's a really good program.
But they need to recruit.
They need to recruit at a much higher level. They can make the playoff. This was about winning a national championship.
So can they build off the Rose Bowl year to have a 2023 class that's like...
But it's not just one class. You got to have two or three classes sticking together to make it work.
But I think if they're on the trajectory where they could get that, if they make a top 10 class out of a Rose Bowl appearance, and then it's a college football playoff appearance, and then maybe it's a top 5 class. Like, I don't know. Like, I think that's the progression you have to get to.
I still think you're looking at five 5 years is the timeline there, because the recruiting has upgraded, I think, the last few years for Utah. It's got to take another leap. It's got to get up into, I think, with the coaching in that program, I don't think it needs to be at, like, Georgia levels, though really it does. But you need to recruit at that level, and the programs that are capable of doing that in the league are USC, Oregon, and God forbid me mentioning them, UCLA.
So Oregon's the other team that Dan Lanning already won a national championship last year. He put together a recruiting staff from hell, like as far as like the rest of the Pac-12 is concerned. They'll go out there and recruit their asses off. So there's potential there too. You mentioned USC. Obviously, that's the probably easiest path, but I don't think any of those teams will win it before they expand.
All right, and last question. This is from Jackson. Herm Edwards situation. Hey, guys, love the pod and love the analysis about the Pac-12. Personally, I do feel like you guys know what you're talking about, and I applaud you for going to a closer source if you don't have the full story. As an ASU fan, I found myself facing disappointment after disappointment between football, basketball, hockey, etc. However, the current situation with the Arizona State football team is particularly troubling. I was encouraged by the firing of Zach Hill, mostly because I feel like he's an incompetent offensive coordinator, as well as Antonio Pierce. While the Pierce loss hurts a little more, it felt inevitable given that he was the recruiting coordinator as well. The questions I'm left with now regard Herm Edwards. Why is President Michael Crow waiting to fire Herm Edwards? The only logical reasons I have heard are, one, ASU is waiting until sanctions are given by the NCAA to fire Edwards, or two, Ray Anderson does not want to fire Herm given that the two are close friends. If the case is number one, I have a little more understanding, but still come to the conclusion that if you're just waiting to fire someone, there's no point in waiting. Clearly, you've already decided the fate of that individual. Why hesitate in doing what you believe is best? In the case that it is the second reason, Ray Anderson not wanting to fire a good friend, then quite frankly, Ray Anderson should be fired too. I feel Arizona State athletics, generally speaking, have prospered under Anderson, and many sports programs outside of football and basketball are headed in the right direction. But if, as the athletic director, you are refusing to fire a man that has not only failed to coach your football team, but is also now in some way responsible for recruiting violations that could set your football program back multiple years, then you yourself are not capable of being a Power 5 athletic director, period. The second question I have is, who will be the next football coach at Arizona State? Do you guys think they would be able to get a coach that has already coached at the Division I level? Or will they need to settle for a lesser-known, potentially worse coach until they are a respectable program again? Thanks for all that you guys do. I love listening to the pod and wish you both the best.
Thanks, Jackson. That was a really well-thought-out email. As far as number one, number two, I think it's a little bit of a combination that they're sort of waiting, but I think, and it's not just that Ray Anderson, they're close friends. I feel like they're just tied. They're tied together. So they're tied at the waist, and if Ray Anderson throws Herm Edwards overboard, like, he's following him because they're going to, you know, and Michael Crow, the president, He's along with them too. They had this idea for a different kind of model when it comes to athletic directors, I mean, athletic departments, and they sort of all bought in. Now, if you remember, I mean, Crow was the guy that kept Larry Scott around a long time. He was his biggest right. advocate. So I don't think it's as easy as just, if you fire Edwards, it's sort of like, you got to fire more. Like, he can't be the end of it. And you feel like once you fired the younger assistants, okay, that's fine. The coordinators are gone. All right. But Herm Edwards is indicated in all, you know, implicated in all of these, in the dossiers and all that kind of stuff too, from what I've read. But I don't think Ray Anderson can be there if Herm's not there. So then you got to get rid of the athletic director. And there's going to be, questions about the president, who started distancing himself from Larry Scott late.
And he's too involved in athletics. Too involved.
Yeah. He's like a bad owner in the NFL.
With presidents of universities or chancellors or what have you, you want them to be fans essentially, but you don't want them to be that involved in decision making. And it feels like he's too involved. So yeah, I mean, the reality is, Jackson, everything you're saying is nail on the head. Herm needs to be fired. Ray Anderson needs to be fired. I think we all know that it's more number two than it is number one, with your reasons there.
Yeah.
I think it has much more to do with Ray Anderson's personal relationship with Herm Edwards, and it needs to end. And that was a bad idea from the start, and it needs to end. Never hire your friends. And then your last question, look, ASU is the top of the very tip top of the middle tier in the Pac-12. You should be able to hire a good coach. It shouldn't have to be dropping down several rungs to go get a coach. ASU, when it's good, has the potential to be a really strong contender every single year in the Pac-12. And that just requires a good coach. But ASU has real recruiting potential. Phoenix is one of the, you know, biggest growing hotbeds of recruiting talent in the West. And it's, you know, what I would do if I'm Arizona is go get somebody with the, or Arizona State, sorry, go get somebody, I'm going to lead into that. Go get somebody with the energy of Jed Fish, because the energy of Jed Fish in Tempe
would have been huge,
would have been a top 15, top 10 class. Because ASU has a lot more to sell, and that's no knocking Arizona. It's just, there's not as much, football history, football tradition at Arizona. And it's not as, it's, you know, not as much of a hotbed in Tucson as it is in Phoenix. ASU, it's a sleeping, very large man. I won't call it a sleeping giant, but it is a sleeping, very large man in the Pac-12 and should be better than it is.
Yeah, no, I agree. Now the issue could be, depending on the sanctions, does it make the job less attractive if there are scholarship limitations, bowl game, things like that?
Not to the right coach, not to the right guy. Somebody who understands the potential for ASU, and I don't know who that is. Probably somebody with some background in the West and some background maybe even at ASU or whatnot. But somebody who understands what that program can do when it's actually run correctly and well. Because I do think, in the same way we talk about the UCLA program being in 20 years of doldrums and USC being in 10 years of doldrums, I think you can say ASU has been in a little bit of a doldrum itself. Not to that extent, because they're pretty consistently like a bowl team every single year.
Like 7-5 forever. Yeah,
just 7-5 forever. But there's more potential than that in that program.
Yeah. All right. Well, good stuff. We appreciate all the questions from everybody. We appreciate Jackson Moore and all the other 24/7 Sports Pac-12 experts that have come on the show over the last 3 weeks. We got to figure out what we're going to do going forward, or I do, because then you'll just say sure, maybe, or no, yeah,
or just not respond.
Yeah, or yeah, that's the best one.
Yeah, I like respond. That one. My favorite one.
And they just show up, and I texted Dave like, "Are you coming in person?" He's like, "Yep." I'm like, "Oh, cool."
And I said, "Yeah, motherfucker."
You did, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice. But yeah, we got to wrap all this stuff up. Maybe we'll get some experts on. If you have any ideas for the stuff, you know, just, you know, pac12podcast@gmail.com.
We won't do them, but please send them in.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a whole bunch of stuff where you're like, oh, we'll get to that eventually.
Uh-huh. If you remember, please reach out.
Yeah. Resend those emails or whatever. And we're like, oh, yeah, we could talk about that. Oh, wait, that's going to take some work. Probably we're not going to talk about that.
Yep.
That's usually the way it goes. All right. Well, thank you guys for listening here to our little show, Podcast of Champions, here on the 24/7 Sports Network. That is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. We appreciate you listening very much. Hope you enjoyed the show, and we will talk to you next time.